parents' perspective. Where do I come from? Is one of the earliest questions children ask. Today's children are exposed to a variety of ethnic groups. It is only natural for them to wonder where they fit in. Parents, as usual, are their best resources. But even parents sometimes need help. I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests today will help us explore ways we can enrich our children's appreciation of their own backgrounds. Our guests are Michelle Hester, head of the International Adoption Program at the Barker Foundation. Welcome, Michelle.
Nice to be here.
And Hoshang Darawala, owner of Fresco Restaurant and father of Jimmy, age 11. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. Nice to be here, too.
Hoshang, why did you feel it was important to share your heritage with your child?
Sandra, I think as a parent, it is really very important that I share my ethnic heritage with my child, and I think so clearly because of two main reasons. The first is more of a general reason, and that is most of us, as we go through life, especially during our adult period, we feel a need to find out who we really are, who our parents were, who our ancestors were, and what was their descent in terms of nationality and religion. At that point, if some of this information was already handed down to us by our parents, it really becomes very easy for us to establish our ethnic identity. The second reason is more of a personal reason, and that is based upon the origin of my family. My wife and I were both born and raised in India, so by birth we are Indian citizens. We were also born into the Zoroastrian faith of religion, so by religion we are Zoroastrians. It really becomes important for me to share all this information with Jimmy in as much detail as possible, so that when he becomes a father and he has children, he can pass all this information on to his kids.
It gives him a real good sense of grounding.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting because I think so much of what you've said applies to children who are adopted internationally and come into families where their cultural and racial background may be quite different than that of their adopted families.
Sure.
And how they feel about that heritage and that culture is going to be an important part about how they feel about themselves. And I think in addition to that, the children also may be expected by the community to know something about their heritage. And if their parents haven't helped them with that, then it puts them in a position of awkwardness and embarrassment.
Yeah. I think that's very true.
Who else besides the parents, Michelle, would you say are the best conveyors of a child's culture?
Well, in the case of international adoption, it's a little tricky because actually the parents can't convey the culture. Because in order to convey a culture, you really have to have a very good understanding of the customs and mores of a culture. And that's something that's built up over time. I think that what one can do, though, is convey a sense of respect for the child's heritage. And that may be the most key element in this. And parents can do that in many kinds of ways. And certainly one of the things they can do is to try to give their child role models from the country that child came from.
How can they do that?
Well, I think many parents are very creative in that. They, for example, if they have a Colombian child, they look for a Colombian dentist. They try to join groups where they may meet people of that particular heritage. People have to be creative about it, but it's possible. And often people from those other cultures are really very interested in serving as a kind of a cultural mentor for a child from that country.
I think it's very true what you just talked about, giving examples of role models. I clearly remember when the movie Gandhi came out, it was such a good example for Jimmy, and he felt so proud.
Yeah.
And the fact that movie went on to win so many Oscar awards, I mean, it was truly amazing how proud Jimmy was. And he always views this movie with great pride.
It's wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Boy, that's a clear-cut example.
Yeah.
Now, you also have a neat example because you have another generation living in your house, right?
Exactly.
Can you tell about how that
we have my mother living with us. She's 82 years old, and God willing, God bless her, in good health. I think it's always very interesting to see how both my grandmother and my child, I mean my mother and my son, react with each other. They both have the different perspectives, and I think both have a lot to learn from each other, especially Jimmy. He learns to be more patient. He learns to be more tolerant. He has a chance to help his grandmother and thus feel important in the house. And I think it's a real good advantage to have such a person living with us.
Oh, yeah. How does that translate into his learning about his heritage? Are there certain things that your mother's been able to convey that are very special that a grandparent can
do? Oh, yeah. All of us, especially my mother, is very strict about keeping traditions in the house. And this gives Jimmy a first-hand chance to see what our tradition is like and how it is followed. And, you know, he has a chance to relate to all this.
Mm-hmm. Is there something special that you remember that she especially does that, you know, he became
some
aware
example?
Of?
Oh, a good example would be prayers every day. You know, a good example is social work, staying involved with our community and inviting friends over and talking with them and getting Jimmy involved with that. So all this is a very positive mm-hmm. experience for Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
I think, too, that idea of having a variety of people is so important because obviously one person can't represent a culture, and cultures are much
exactly.
richer than that.
And they say grandparents are really the repositories of so much, sort of institutional memory, if you will. That kind of, does she tell him stories about, you know, his ancestors and so forth?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And also her experiences when she was Jimmy's age. So he has a chance to find out what it was like for what it was like people of his age to be in India when she was her age.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific. Now, some people do send their kids to special kinds of schools. Have either mm-hmm. of you had experiences with that?
Well, certainly in international adoption, that happens. There are culture camps for Korean kids, for Latin American children, for children of all different, for Chinese children. There's here in Washington, there's a Chinese Saturday school for children who have been adopted from China. I think there's a Korean Saturday school. So there are lots of avenues for people who want to seek those out. Also, another thing that we find is that many parents, particularly with Latin American children, may choose to raise their children bilingually, or at least once they get to school age, to put them in bilingual programs. So I think that's another resource for parents.
That's terrific. Now, what happens if the parents don't speak that second language?
Well, that happens, and that works, actually. I just visited a family this morning who's raising their children bilingually. The person, the babysitter, speaks Spanish to the child, and they speak English to the child. And they're slowly learning Spanish themselves
from the child.
From the child. So, you know, there are all kinds of ways this can work.
Is your household bilingual, Hosheng?
To a certain degree, yes. We speak Gujarati, which is our local dialect, and for most part we speak English.
Can Jimmy speak Gujarati?
Well, he can speak a little, but uh-huh. he tries not to as much as possible. Uh-huh. He can understand a lot more than what he claims he can understand.
Uh-huh.
Very smart.
So,
children do
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting point. I think that one that we talk a lot with our families about, that often the key issue for this is how comfortable the family is with difference and how respectful they can be of the child's either comfort or discomfort with difference. I think that in international adoption, we see that maybe it's the primary issue, not necessarily the parent's ability to convey a rich feeling of that of a particular culture, but the parent's interest and acceptance of all different kinds of differences. Children pick up on that.
Michelle, what suggestions can you give for making traditions a positive experience in a family?
Well, taking that back a step, I think the first thing the parents need to do is to really explore their feelings about their child's cultural heritage. For example, families adopting children from China have to look at the fact that their children were abandoned because of a one-child, one-family policy. That's a difficult story. It's a difficult story that they know that they're going to need to be telling their children someday. In order to do that, they really need to have a broader framework, a broader understanding of that culture so that they can fit that piece in and develop some sense of empathy for why that might be and why that might have had to happen. I think that kind of work the parents need to do is real important, because one can't overlay traditions on a negative feeling about a child's heritage. Another example would be in Colombia. Certainly, the thing that we hear most about in Colombia is drugs. Parents need to, develop a broader understanding of what Colombia is about, to understand how that piece fits in, and to understand that that's a relatively minor part of that culture. So, having said that, I think that once the parents have been able to come to some sort of broader understanding of their child's background, then they can bring, I think, more enthusiasm to trying to use traditions to help that child develop an appreciation for their heritage. There are lots of ways that people can do that. People certainly use folklore and books. They use movies. They try to find cultural mentors. They may travel to that country. They may learn the language. That's certainly not uncommon. There are groups of families that get together. For example, again, the Families with Children from China group gets together and tries to figure out activities which the families can share together, which are fun for kids. So I think there are lots of ways that people can do that. Always taking the child's lead, I think. It's a complicated for children who are adopted internationally. Their heritage may be complicated for them in many ways. They may have very little information about their birth parents, really, in some cases, none whatsoever. So that their feelings about their country and their feelings about their birth parents may be mixed up together. And I think that adoptive parents need to be respectful of that. If children are going through a phase of not being interested in their heritage, I think the parents need to be respectful of that, perhaps trying to figure out what that might mean, but not pushing it. What works most is if the parents are interested in the culture themselves.
There's a mutual respect.
Yes.
Hoshang, what kinds of issues have arisen with your raising Jimmy in such a minority kind of a religion?
Linda, the single most important issue that these Russian parents have to face is the significantly low population count of our community in the world. Today, we are estimated as only 100,000 in the entire world,
which
only about 60,000 are in India. The rest are scattered in countries like US, UK, Canada, Pakistan, and Iran. This explains why outside of India, most people may not have even heard about us, and this explains why Jimmy is the only Zoroastrian child in the school. This situation presents itself as a major problem to Zoroastrian parents who have the obligation of making their kids feel that they are from a worthy religion. When you're really a minority of the minority, it becomes really difficult and an uphill task for parents to pass on the religious convictions to their children.
So what kinds of things have you tried to do that to help with that along? That is a difficult thing.
Well, you try to keep your child assured as much as possible that you are from a great religion by sharing your experiences, by sharing information. And one thing that has definitely helped us is by taking frequent trips to India, where he has a chance to be with other fellow Zoroastrians and spend some time with them and experience the culture firsthand.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about in the Washington area? Do you have a group that you get together with?
Yes, we have a very, very small group. We have about 600 Zoroastrians that live in the Washington area. But again, like I said, we are so few. We don't have the necessary infrastructure that we can use to really pass on the religion to our children. For example, we don't have a church that our children can look up to. We do have a small community center where we hold periodic religious classes, but that's the most we have.
Mm-hmm. But you don't have regular weekly services or something that he goes to?
No, not at all.
I see.
Do you end up doing that at home as a substitute?
Yes, exactly. That puts the extra pressure on the parents to take up that role and give as much as they can on a daily basis at home.
But Jimmy probably knows more than kids who are forced to go sit someplace one day a week because he ends up having to be at home. In terms of keeping special traditions, how has that affected Jimmy's relationships with his peers?
So now, keeping special traditions, as we all know, has its own challenges, especially when you come from a minority group. And Jimmy has definitely not been an exception. There has been times where he has been targeted because of his ethnic diversity. But I should say, for the most part, it has been very, very positive. I clearly remember one time when Jimmy had his friends over for a sleepover. He took out his prayer book and he showed it to his friends. And he even recited a small prayer, which was very, very well received by his friends. Mm-hmm. So I think his special heritage really helps Jimmy to be positive and to be, you know, more informative with his friends.
And the kids, I think, respect those differences.
I think so,
when the child who is different feels very comfortable and grounded. Now, you have a very special ceremony that Jimmy went through. Do you want to share that?
Exactly. This special ceremony is called the Navjot ceremony. It's really officially bringing the child into the religion. We could have had it here, but we chose to take it to India because there it's more authentic. And, of course, Jimmy will have a chance to be with his relatives and experience it firsthand of how it was when we went through that ceremony in India.
Can you tell a little bit about what he had to do? I remember the children were very impressed at the kinds of things he had to master.
Exactly. Well, in terms of preparation, they have to be ready with a certain amount of prayers. They have to practice that ahead of time. And then in the early part of the evening, we have a family priest hold a ceremony. And there are a certain set of prayers that Jimmy had to perform with the priest. And the rest of the prayers are just performed by the priest itself. They have to be dressed in a special robe, which is all white, which is a very significant color in our religion. And after those ceremonies, it's followed by, you know, music and dancing and dinner and, you know, the usual festivity that goes with the ceremony.
Sounds wonderful.
Mm. Yes. But he had to prepare for this for a long time,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
And he had to memorize a lot of these
absolutely,
prayers, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I remember hearing that his friends were extremely impressed.
Right. Michelle, have you dealt with children who are uncomfortable about something in their background? And how is this handled?
Oh, I think it's inevitable that children are going to be uncomfortable with things about their background. It's like, you know, at some point in their development, it's just part of growing up and part of integrating different parts of themselves. I think that, you know, as I said earlier, the tie with the heritage and the tie with the birth parent are sort of interwoven. And because of that, that can create some conflict for children. They may at some point, for example, feel that their whole country rejected them. And, of course, that can be painful and confusing in light of the fact that their parents are trying to provide a very positive understanding of their cultural background. I think, you know, again, that speaks to the need for the parents trying to convey the richness of a culture. And obviously all cultures have their positive aspects, and they all have their negative aspects.
Absolutely.
And part of really understanding a culture is understanding both parts of that. I think that, again, parents' acceptance of that, occasional discomfort is important. I remember a story that a client told me, which I thought was very telling. She had a Korean daughter who was about 10, and they had gotten tickets for a dance celebration at Christmas time. Parents feeling very excited that they'd found this wonderful opportunity to celebrate their daughter's heritage. They also had two birth children who were in their teens. The last minute, the little girl said that she didn't want to go. Absolutely. She wasn't going to go. And, you know, after many go-arounds, the mother decided that that would be okay, that she could stay at home with her friends. So the rest of the family went. And as she was going out the door, she heard her daughter saying to her friend, "Well, my parents really like that Korean stuff. They really think it's interesting. Maybe next year I'll go."
So, what a powerful message.
Exactly. Very powerful message.
Let's talk for a minute about diversity in a school setting. We have a lot of diversity in our schools today. How important is it for a child to have someone of similar background to identify with in a school setting? Actually, I'm asking Michelle, but either of you could jump in here.
Well, I think that is important. Now, certainly it's complicated, again, for children who are adopted internationally. For example, a Guatemalan adopted child growing up in a Caucasian family, who is that child's peer? It's a little complicated. He may be in a school setting with another Guatemalan who recently immigrated from Guatemala with his family. That child, that Guatemalan child, is not going to see this child as their peer. So that can create some difficulty. I think, again, though, the issue is that it is important for kids to be in diverse school settings where there are kids from lots of different backgrounds. There are lots of ways of being okay.
Okay. You want to jump in on that one?
Okay.
Could both of you offer suggestions for a minute to parents on ways to share their heritage with their children? There are a lot of parents listening who have different heritages than what we've discussed, but there are, I'm sure, things that cut across everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think the suggestion that I'd like to offer to parents in similar capacity as I am is to be patient with the kids, is to be very patient with the kids, understand their situation, and be slow in pushing your family traditions and culture onto them, and at the same time be flexible and do the level best they can to understand their culture and, you know, draw kind of a mutual ground where both of them can comfortably live with each other.
Okay.
No, I think that's a very good summary. I think that idea of taking the child's lead and being accepting about where they are at a particular time is very important. You can't push it.
Exactly.
We'd like to thank both of you. We'd like to thank Hoshang Darawalla for giving us a parent's viewpoint and Michelle Hester for her overview of multicultural family issues.
This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share a parent's perspective.
If you would like to send suggestions, comments, or questions to Parents Perspective, you can email to parentspr@aol.com. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Byrne.